Amazon makes life really easy and it's really hard to get out of it. Think of it. I never had to deal with content generation or demand generation the way that D2C brands do. I mean, just 2-3 weeks ago, I was looking at a Meta ads portal and I was like, wait, I have to create ad creative? I have to come up with this from the bottom up? It's not just I put in a bid for PPC and the platform takes it from there? The answer is no.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. And in this episode, our guest is going to be inspiring you about the world of Amazon. We've got someone on the show who is Amazon first. I know, it's kind of like we're jumping over the fence to see if the grass is greener over there. We'll be getting into the challenges of being Amazon first, how things have changed, what they're currently planning on doing to increase their sales, and also a whole load of stuff around logistics and team and efficiency. Really cool guest. Thoroughly enjoyed chatting with him. I know you're going to like this one. So make sure you listen to the end because his top tips are really good too. And you'll also get my own take on this episode. Running ads across a broad channel mix, but unsure where to invest your next pound? Alvi helps e-commerce experts like you with full funnel attribution, budget allocation, and automated bidding towards real business outcomes, so you can stop guessing and start scaling. Take children's clothing retailer POP, for example, who saw a 27% increase in average order value after implementing Alvi's bidding signals. Do you want similar results? Then go to ecmp.info/Alvi and book your demo. Make sure you add the note e-commerce master plan when you book to get your 3-month free trial. That's ecmp.info/Alvi to book your demo. ecmp.info/Alvie.
Jetzt gibt's Cheez-It, ein neuer knuspriger Snack, der köstlich nach Käse schmeckt. Hol dir jetzt deine Packung im Handel und das Beste, du kannst sie einmal gratis testen. Wer will heute Abend den Cheez-It? Cheez-It, der Cheez-It. Jetzt zum Gratis-Testen. Teilnahme ab 18 Jahren. Kauf- und Kassenbon-Upload bis 30. Juni erforderlich. Nur solange der Vorrat reicht. Teilnahmebedingungen auf Aktionspackungen und auf cheezit-aktion.de.
And now to introduce our special guest. Charles Ciccolo is the founding partner of Joey's, an Amazon-first homewares brand. Since 2010, he's been building a lean, everything-in-house Amazon operation focused on practical, everyday consumer goods. They now also sell across Walmart and eBay and even have a Shopify store in the mix as well. In total, annual sales are now over $10 million, with growth at 20% year on year. Hello, Charles.
Hello.
Very cool to have you here and congrats on building such a good business.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on. You know, it's somebody asked me once what my momentum moment was, and I told them for the first time I saw an additional comma in a bank account. And that eighth digit is really remarkable to see.
So many people talk about 7 digits, but 8 digits is a whole other ball game, isn't it?
And you know, I was so disappointed every previous year that I didn't get the eighth. But hey, listen, I still didn't get the eighth. I'm just on track for it. So God willing.
Well, we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
So how did you end up in the world of Amazon and e-commerce?
So it actually goes back to my upbringing in high school. Let me start before that. In elementary school, I asked my dad for money. There's this thing called money that's like freedom. And I'm like, how do I get more of it? You know, he points over to my grandpa and then he goes, go and ask him how you get money. My grandpa tells me, you work. You show up here Sunday mornings. And I was 10 years old at the time. And he said, every Sunday morning, I tend to my plants in my greenhouse and I'll see you there. You're getting $10 a day. So for my first job at 10 years old, I got $10 a day. I saw my own $100 bill for the first time after 10 weeks of working there. And that was the, you know, sort of entrepreneurial immigrant household mindset that I grew up in. And from that point on, I said, so grandpa's greenhouse, I did that for about 2-3 years, got into high school. And right before high school, discovered Amazon. saw stuff on sale. And then I said to myself, well, there's a margin here. So I did that. I used my 10 free prints in the library to print out shipping labels, shipped them out through my school that had daily UPS pickups conveniently. The security guard knew me. The teachers knew me. Some teachers tried to say it was against the rules, but there was no rule against selling in school online. It was too new for that. And then I was about to go to law school. I was in litigation. And then my brother tapped me on the shoulder one day, who also did the same thing on Amazon, said, do you want to try doing this for real? And we just never looked back. I said to myself, if I want to go to law school later on, I swear law school doesn't need me. It'll still be there. But and then I never went to law school. And here I am. And we just built this from the bottom up.
Very cool. And enough's changed in e-commerce over the last 15 years, but the amount that Amazon has changed in the last 15 years is a whole other ballgame, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
How do you roll with the punches?
Exactly that. Exactly. I do. I just roll with it. I mean, I was on a different podcast where they asked me when I first started selling on Amazon, and I'm 29 years old. I started selling 15 years ago. So I was 14. They go, was it when there was the sell on Amazon button? I'm like, oh my God, yes, I forgot about that. So what he was referring to was under every Amazon listing, there was actually a sell on Amazon button where you can say, I want to sell this product that I'm looking at. And that's how I used to list product. And, you know, the it seems like mounds and mounds of memory data was just unraveled when he said that. So that was something else. But in terms of keeping up with the times, I am neurotic about keeping up with the times when it comes to business or otherwise, things that are going on in our world, current events, business, anything. I just keep up. I just have to keep up with it. And I also like foreseeing trends, like this whole AI boom that happened with the release of ChatGPT a couple of years ago to the general public. I mean, people are now, all it is the extension of a pattern that we saw since 2010, shortening of attention spans. We no longer have the attention span now to siphon through Google results, reputable search results, come up with creative copy and funnels and processes. That's all the AI revolution is. It's the acceleration of a pattern of shortened attention spans. I mean, I use AI in each and every day. I don't think it's good or bad, but it's definitely a trend that I see and I just keep up with. It was not a mistake that Amazon is trying to be more sensitive to brands because of the high pressure being put on it by the FTC, Democratic, even Republican administrations. I mean, it's all of it is just, I just keep up with it because number one, I like it. Number two, that's, you know, information is power.
You just have to, don't you? So let's explain a bit more about the business itself. So you're based in the States. Are you purely selling to the States or you sell it overseas as well?
So I sell overseas to the agents that are willing to deal with that. There's something on Amazon called the NARF, North American Remote Fulfillment Program. It takes my U.S. inventory, lists it on Canada, Mexico, and Brazil. Hands off. I don't have to worry about any of the back-end fulfillment, customs, tariffs, nothing like that. That I do. I did experiment with selling cross-border directly on the Canadian marketplace. The bureaucracy ended up being way too much, and there was no predictability as far as calculating my profit margins. So I backed out of that. And then if somebody in a different country wants to purchase my product, I have no issue selling to them, but it comes with setting up an international marketplace or an international market separate from the US one seems to be way too cumbersome, and frankly, I don't see enough opportunity in it. I could be, you know, convincing myself of something that doesn't exist, but that's where I fell out.
Kind of duplicates all the workload, doesn't it, when you do that? And
duplicates and complicates, especially when, yeah, I have to deal with VATs and the EU.
Yeah, sorry
and
about
all
that.
No, good.
Yeah, but it's interesting how, like, Amazon has made that bit of it easy. Like, you can do the North America thing from, yeah, the US, and they worry about, mm-hmm, where the stock is, all the admin, all the fees, the tariffs, that everything just gets dealt with by them. They run a very similar thing in the Europe that a lot of European sellers use to send stock across the whole of Europe. And it's kind of one of those ways in which I think Amazon kind of makes things super easy for you. So you just stay there.
Well, yeah, they do. And, you know, it's funny. I was at a conference once and I said, I was at a conference once where there was mostly D2C brands. And I said that I'm a recovering addict. The reason why I said that is because Amazon makes that easy for you. They went into this whole, you know, spiel of, yeah, they struggled with addiction too. His family member, whatever it is. I go, no. Amazon makes life really easy and it's really hard to get out of it. That's, you know, the door is really easy when it comes there, because think of it. I never had to deal with content generation or demand generation the way that D2C brands do. I mean, just 2-3 weeks ago, I was looking at a Meta ads portal and I was like, wait, I have to create ad creative? I have to come up with this from the bottom up? It's not just I put in a bid for PPC and the platform takes it from there? The answer is no. And Amazon never prepared me for that, never prepared me for email marketing. Those are muscles that I could say I've been in the business for 15 years, but I've never exercised.
You say about going to a mainly D2C conference. I think if you go to a mainly marketplaces conference, you will find a lot of people who are on Amazon and who are going, yeah, next year we're going to build our Shopify store. Next year we're going to move on to eBay or Walmart or something. Next year we're going to do this. And then you see them at the same conference 12 months later. It's like, yeah, next year we're going to do this.
Oh, I never got around.
Yeah, because it is such a different business model. You know, it's such a different skill set and such a different range of things to do. You must have found this as you diversified onto Walmart, eBay, and having your own store. Mm-hmm. That also adds a lot of complexity, the same as going international does, a whole load of new things to learn.
Yeah, from platform to platform, it's pretty similar because everybody's just trying to copy Amazon. It's just they're playing insanely skewed games of catch up. And I'm specifically talking about Walmart. Walmart is dying to be the next Amazon, but it's funny. It's Amazon 10 years ago. But as far as trying to share that knowledge in conferences, you find very few people willing to actually implement the changes they say they will to get off Amazon or to start some D2C operation. And I mean, myself, I'm not immune to that. I've been trying to get this D2C operation off the ground for a very long time, but it's just not the structure of my business. It's not how I built it so far. A lot of it was built on the retail arbitrage model, and I'm trying to not shift away from it, but expand it.
We may get into that later. First off, though, your team, when you applied to be on the podcast and it was very clear from your application that you're very proud of the fact you're doing everything in-house. So what does your team look like? First of all, how many of you are there and what are you all doing? And then let's get into why you're doing everything in-house.
So it's a family business. I'm partners with my two brothers. Makes for a very interesting dinner talk. And we have two locations across New York, both operators' warehouses. One of them has an administrative office wing to it. But when I say administrative office, it just means a place for me and my brothers to do admin stuff. We have one VA in the Philippines that really functions as my executive assistant because I just take care of most of the admin. The warehouse workers are about 9 per location, and we take care of that as well. So warehousing, labor, HR, logistics, freight, item labeling, packaging, all us, all in-house. When it comes to ads, we outsource most of it. When it comes to listing building, we outsource some of it. Software, repricing software, we outsource that entirely. I like to think we outsource the stuff that could be either A, automated, and we just pay for software solutions for it, or B, nobody's sitting down and doing ads. We actually tried doing that in-house. One of us ended up spending 20 of our hours doing it, as opposed to outsourcing it to an agency that automated it and got the same return on investment. So we just said, yeah, we're not spending 20 hours of our week doing this. That's generally our operation. And I mean, hey, you're looking at the forklift operator of the warehouse right now.
The way you talk through that, mm-hmm. there's a real kind of hard-nosed business numbers method behind making those decisions, which I think is something which comes more easily to a business that is Amazon first than a business that is own website first, because on Amazon it's such a ones and zeros numbers game. you know, the brand, the story, the values are so much less important. Do you think that's one of the reasons why Amazon's worked so well for you? Or do you think Amazon shaped you into that that method of decision making?
No, I think they shaped us into this for sure. If you look at the sheer volume of pallets and cartons and pieces that we're looking at, a D2C brand doesn't start selling pallets of merchandise. A D2C brand starts with poly bags. Like I alluded to earlier, they have to deal with demand generation for them to get to a spot where they're sending truckloads of merchandise and dealing with less than truckload freight counts, pallet classes. Those are very volume heavy things. And for a brand to get there is eons of time. Because I deal with selling other brands, that's what allows me to deal with that kind of logistical element of my business. Now, focusing on the hard-nosed kind of analysis that I've been doing, it's not a numbers thing as much as it is a philosophy thing. There's only a 24 hours in each and every one of our days, and the more time we spend on a certain product, the more expert it makes us, the more learned it makes us in a certain field. You can either go shallow into a bunch of things or deep into one. When I know I'm not going to go deep into, like I said, ads, I can outsource that. And when they're giving me the same, sometimes better return on investment, I'm going to outsource it. And no, I didn't calculate it, numbers and cents, but I did at least make that kind of philosophical determination. And that's where I'm at for that.
You mentioned about how, you know, that you've built the business selling other people's product, other brands' product.
Yeah.
Is that still as viable on Amazon now as it used to be, or is it changing?
No, so I wouldn't say dwindling. If you go back 6, 7, 8 years, you'll find people saying that it's hard to do, don't do it. You have to start your own brand. You have to get a mold in China. You have to import it here and so on and so on. It's only been getting harder. I'll tell you that because we've been doing it so long. We are sort of really built for a lot of resistance and swaying in the wind. But even the past 6 months, we got hurt bad. And we're still making it. I mean, it's still great. It's still a great model. It's working for us. It's keeping these lights on. But it's really getting harder because, I mean, it's a sign of the times. How much longer can even Nike just threw up the white flag and said, all right, we have to be on Amazon. All of these brands that are just not on Amazon or not taking direct control of their supply chain are waking up. Obviously, over the past 6 years, it's going to get more complicated if they're taking direct control. Where they realize that they need us is they're not accustomed to operating something that has restock limits, something that has to have more efficient building of a certain pallet to pack a truck in a certain way so that your cost per transportation of per unit is the lowest it could possibly be. They're not built for that. Brands are big bureaucratic structures that are just focused on one thing, and it's brand awareness. Let us do the selling, logistics, and legwork. But usually that's the cycle I'm seeing.
How are you combating that, if you don't mind me asking? You know, how are you going to create your own brands? Are you finding partners who get that they're not set up to do this well?
So like I said, it's not it's a lot less, I should say, of a dollars and cents kind of thing and more of a philosophical. So back in 2020, COVID-ish time, we said for the most amount of control and stability, we need a private label brand for sure. That's a lot better of a predictor of our future than retail arbitrage is, because retail arbitrage, you know, some customer can get a wrong item and Amazon will terminate your multi-million dollar account without a blink of an eye. There's a common saying that they shoot first, aim later. But when it comes to private label, we said, all right, we'll start investing in that. And that was in 2020. Some years it made up majority of our sales in gross revenue. And until now, I mean, we've never really told one coherent brand story or invested in a unique value proposition or interrupted a certain market or a certain niche up until now. Before I got on this call, I spoke to a factory in China. Again, factories who we've been dealing with for 5 years at this point, trying to do all the stuff that we're quote unquote supposed to be doing. The interrupting a certain market, unique value proposition, and so on and so on and so on. So that's where we find ourselves now. So we had a 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Now I'm going to try to do this the quote unquote right way. The reason why I say quote unquote is just because every thinker or guru in the e-commerce space say you're supposed to do this. And I mean, frankly, we've been fine without it. So I'm going to try it, see if there's any merit to their argument and go from there.
I wish you luck, and I'd love to find out if it does work or not.
Thank you.
But good to hear that the private label stuff's coming on. You've alluded a few times to the logistics challenges of dealing with Amazon rather than sending to individuals. Obviously, you know, Amazon are dictating what arrives at their warehouse rather than you getting to do it. So how do you, have you got any kind of ways you've gone about making the most of that and avoiding some of the pitfalls? Any advice to those listening who are struggling
sure.
with it?
So there are two. So like I alluded to in the beginning as well, I see patterns. And because of it, let's say our shortening attention span, also shortening of patience. There's Amazon Prime, where everything, where if something takes 3 to 5 business days, at least here in the States, to arrive to a customer, that's considered generations. And it can impact customer satisfaction. So when Amazon leverages their network for Prime delivery, you sort of have to succumb to that. And with them now releasing Buy with Prime, directly integrating with TikTok Shop and Pinterest and your own Shopify sites or your own D2C sites, not even just Shopify, you feel like you're doing your business a discredit if you don't give into the Amazon Prime system. Now, the two levers we have to pull is, number one, my brother and partner knows their logistics system better than them. He knows exactly which time to book shipments, which carriers to use to get the best rates, how to switch a certain warehouse or fulfillment center to receive our merchandise. He is completely dedicated to that. So that's one huge advantage I have in my partnership. The second is we own our facilities. So we're not using a 3PL that's overcharging us for storage, prep, packing, labor. We invested in the two real estate locations we have, both as real estate investments and as operations. So, I mean, I've heard horror stories of people renting U-Hauls to go to a 3PL that they've hired to just take their stuff out and because somebody wouldn't answer their email. So, I mean, it's a nightmare that I would never have. Yes, it comes along with hiring staff, dealing with a whole bunch of other headaches that probably other D2C brands don't want to deal with. But that control is something that I like. So when it comes to shipping on their terms, it's just another dance. But my two levers of advantage are, number one, my partner who's completely invested in the logistics of Amazon. And the second is owning our operation.
It does strike me as, like, I'm generally speaking a fan of outsourcing ops and, you know, pick, pack, fulfillment, all that kind of stuff. Because when you're running own website business, it becomes a distraction, you know, if you're doing that, which you can outsource, and you can outsource it well when it's single items. But when your business is all about getting the product into Amazon, which is a very complicated endpoint, you know, correct timing, correct thing, you know, all that complexity they give you, why would you then add a point of weakness on the front end? Because there aren't many fulfillment houses, 3PLs, that specialize in getting stuff into Amazon. And it is a whole different ballgame. So I totally get why you keep that in-house. And obviously the real estate investment is a nice angle.
Yeah, I mean, it's very capital intensive. It's all that capital could have gone into a whole bunch of other things, but it ended up going to the real estate. That was just a business decision we made.
And do you see your future as let me ask, what do you think in the next few years is going to be the key thing for you guys going forward?
I for sure think that this private label, what I'm quote unquote supposed to do, is going to take the lead. If done right. We definitely got the logistic part down, I'll tell you that. But the whole telling a brand story and appealing to people's emotions and coming up with meta ads that convert and all of that, I think, is the way of the future because, like I said, it gives us the most control and stability. But something I've been trying to do is getting our D2C site off the ground. And I realized I think I was putting the cart before the horse there because I didn't nail down the unique value proposition and the brand story first. I think that I have to get that D2C site off the ground.
It is so often the case when you're, I certainly find if something's just not coming together, it's usually because I've missed the first step. You know, like you get that kind of white page of nightmare and you go, I don't know how to, and you try it and you try to build it and you realize you missed a critical step. So yeah, it could well be, maybe once you've nailed that brand piece, then you'll be away.
I'm hoping so. And listen, I'm not looking to shrink my Amazon pie, my Amazon slice of the pie. I'm looking to just grow that pie.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
Running ads across a broad channel mix, but unsure where to invest your next pound? Alvi helps e-commerce experts like you with full funnel attribution, budget allocation, and automated bidding towards real business outcomes, so you can stop guessing and start scaling. Take children's clothing retailer POP, for example, who saw a 27% increase in average order value after implementing Alvi's bidding signals. Do you want similar results? Then go to ecmp.info/Alvi and book your demo. Make sure you add the note e-commerce master plan when you book to get your 3-month free trial. That's ecmp.info/Alvi to book your demo. ecmp.info/Alvie.
Jetzt gibt's Cheez-It, ein neuer knuspriger Snack, der köstlich nach Käse schmeckt. Hol dir jetzt deine Packung im Handel und das Beste, du kannst sie einmal gratis testen. Wer will heute Abend den Cheez-It? Cheez-It, der Cheez-It. Jetzt zum Gratis-Testen. Teilnahme ab 18 Jahren. Kauf- und Kassenbon-Upload bis 30. Juni erforderlich. Nur solange der Vorrat reicht. Teilnahmebedingungen auf Aktionspackungen und auf cheez-it-aktion.de.
It's time for the Top Tips Round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our business to the next level. Charles, are you ready for the top tips?
Let's do it.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
If we're talking business book, I say hands down, it's The Algebra of Wealth by Scott Galloway. Scott Galloway is an NYU Stern professor, very successful businessman, serial entrepreneur, has great content he puts out regularly. And he is just, he's so real when it comes to the data point he gives. And it's just, nobody can beat the index funds. Warren Buffett has a famous bet that plenty of firms got priced out of in the first few years, that take your money, invest it in an index fund, don't look at it. And he goes into the science of it. I mean, sure, some things might have changed now with crypto and some private equity firms, but nothing is proven better than his advice. I mean, he gives you advice on how to build your wealth, primarily if you're young, under 30 or so, but also if you're above that. He shows you how you can shift your experience. So he goes from either learn, gain the experience, and then if you're on the older side, 30 plus, he goes, you can use that experience in a certain way. And when I say work hard. And from there, he lays out the algebra of wealth.
Very cool. Now, you said if I was going to do a business book, so is there another book you've got thinking in your head?
Oh, for sure. My favorite book of all time is Talk by Michael Smirkanish. It's a political thriller, completely fiction. And I usually like to beat my chest that I'm a hard worker. But I remember taking off one day in the first 3 or 4, maybe even 5 years of starting this business, because I started that book and I needed to finish it. So I took one day off in the very startup days to finish this book. I remember I sat on my front porch and got burnt in the sun. I remember that.
That is one hell of a fiction book recommendation. So I will be buying that straight after this, because that sounds like something I need to read. Okay, traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
Funneling people to your website for customer support. So when you have an issue with your product, people can go file a return. People can go, if you're selling on a marketplace, straight to the marketplace for them to intervene. But if you funnel customers to your website where you control the narrative and you control whether they file for a return, whether you give them a returnless refund, or whether you can generate another sale, maybe with an affiliate code so it lessens the blow on your margins, you turn probably very upset customer into a customer that got either free money or lessened the blow on your margins. So that's a very underrated marketing flow. And yeah, that's nothing like a top of funnel type of hack, but I see that as a huge value add.
Oh, so many people forget the bottom of the funnel, and there is so much cool stuff you can do. So love that one. Thank you. Tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
From day to day, we collaborate using Hubstaff. Hubstaff is something that allows us to collaborate on projects and make sure that we're in sync, up to date. For any of those operators out there, it also, let's say for my VA in the Philippines, it takes snapshots of their screen to make sure that I'm not being defrauded of time. So for those of you out there, I'd appreciate that. And primarily, if you're in the Amazon space, I would say you can't live without either a Helium 10 or a Jungle Scout. Or if you're using repricing, FeedVisor is the way to go. Definitely all great tools.
Nice. Love that. Thank you. Carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
The best way is packing efficiency. When it comes to packing a carton, a poly bag, all the way up to a pallet and a truckload. I mean, we ship out full truckloads of merchandise and the amount of space we see. So simple value add. The amount of space on top of a standard stacked pallet is 72 inches, but a double stacked pallet can go up to 96 inches. Trailer height is 110 inches. Why would I ever ship a single stacked pallet? There's a bunch of space being burned in diesel to get to their end destination. Just fill up as much as you can, and it's a pretty simple fix. Just you're shipping double the merchandise. You're lessening the cost of transportation per unit. It helps your margins and helps the environment. Why the hell not?
Air is the enemy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And for somebody who, I mean, plastic bins were a big part of our business for a while.
It was so much air.
I'm paying to ship air. It's crazy. But we did a fix on that.
Very cool. Okay, Charles, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media?
So a few months ago, I said to myself, you know, I'm pissed off. There are so many agency owners that run newsletters and only give back value to get you on a discovery call or a retainer. So I said to myself, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to put content out there as just a seller. So I started Just the Seller newsletter, where I write really what it's like in my day-to-day life as a business operator. I have no agency. I don't decide to upsell you on a thing. There are affiliate links, but that's really it. I just take the time out to say what it's like as a business operator. Of course, I'm Amazon first. I'm also in the D2C space, primarily Amazon though. And I like to report on it all. I go to over 20 or 30 conferences a year. I do some speaking and presentations at some of them just as a result. And the content I put out is just from that angle. I am just a seller, and this is what it's like to do any sort of operation from D2C to Amazon.
Nice. Very cool, everyone. So if you want Charles's take on everything that's going on in Amazon and the industry at the moment, head to justasellernewsletter.com, where you can get yourself signed up for that. And presumably, if they want to get in contact with you, they can do that via that site as well.
Sure. Right there. I look at every reply. It comes straight to me. Not a generic inbox or anything. I read everything that comes my way. I don't respond to everything that comes my way because I'd be upsold on too many things. But that is where you get in touch with me.
Very cool. Well, Charles, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been great and fascinating hearing your Amazon and other things journey. So thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, wasn't it fascinating to jump to the other side of the fence and find out what's going on for someone who has been so Amazon focused for the last 15 years, but now about to, I guess, enter our world and get worried about brand and all those things. Loads of cool pieces of advice in there around the logistics and obviously around Amazon and other elements. So thoroughly enjoyed my chat with Charles. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including those top tips and links to the things we mentioned, by heading over to the website, ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also go direct to the right page on the website by using the short code ecmp.info/the number of this episode. Once you get to the website, why not add yourself to our email list? You know you want to. Okay, If you liked this episode, then you really should go and check out our recent Marketplaces series on our sister podcast, Keep Optimizing. We finished releasing it last week and it really builds on this episode. There's five whole episodes about growing your marketplace sales, including how to improve your Amazon conversion rates, how to grow your marketplace sales generally, how to decide what marketplace to be on, loads of good stuff across those five episodes. So that's available right now on Keep Optimizing. Just search for Keep Optimizing, you'll find it. And if you want more episodes about homewares, then head to ecmp.info/home. Thank you so much for tuning into this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners just like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along that path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.